It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. On Monday, Allegheny County confirmed 920 new cases of COVID-19 over a 48-hour period. The winter surge that public health experts warned of is here, and it's spreading across the country. Health leaders continue to insist we stay home and wear masks, but the number of coronavirus infections keeps rising. So what is it like in hospitals where healthcare workers are facing the worst of the pandemic every day? Joining us now is Claire Zangerle, Chief Nurse Executive with the Allegheny Health Network. Welcome, Claire.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Claire, you and other nurse leaders from the region penned a letter urging people to take COVID mitigation seriously. Why did you feel the need to do it now as opposed to maybe earlier in the surge?
Earlier in the surge, our chief medical officers from across the region penned a similar letter. And that was probably in March or so. You know, as a group, our chief nursing officers across Western PA meet on a weekly basis to discuss a lot of issues surrounding COVID, how we're dealing with it. And as the surge started to ramp back up here in the fall, as nurse leaders, we felt it was pretty important to put our voice out there. I mean, after all, 2020 is the year of the nurse and the midwife, and nursing for the last 19 years, according to Gallup, has been the most trusted profession in the country. We think that people probably got a little lax on mask wearing, on social gatherings, on hand washing. This is not a short-term fix that we have here. This is something that has to be we have to be vigilant about going forward. So it was time for us to speak up to the community.
Mm-hmm. I recently heard a comment from a nurse in El Paso, Texas, who said, we, referring to nurses and other healthcare workers, are not frontline workers. We are the last line of defense. Members of the public are the front line against COVID. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's a great way to characterize it. I think the public has a lot of responsibility here. And I do think sometimes the public isn't accepting that responsibility. And that's part of, not the whole reason, we're in this predicament. We are at the front line, but we're the last line. We're the one who's going to heal you, who's going to get you home, who's going to make you feel better. And if you can't get through this virus, if you're not going to survive it, we're the last ones that are there with you and your family.
Why do you think some people are so resistant to the public health orders and advisories?
I think people just don't think it's real because it hasn't had an effect on them. Maybe they don't know people who have had the virus and who've not felt well, or have had the virus and have been hospitalized, or who have had the virus and not survived. But I think people think we're overreacting in some ways. And I also think people believe we're taking something away from them by asking them to do something that they're not used to doing. Well, it's my decision whether or not I wear a mask. You can't make me wear a mask. No, we can't. But it's just a moral and ethical code that you have internally.
We just wrapped up the Thanksgiving holiday. We know that not everyone stayed home. What are you seeing in the hospital now? What are you hearing from your colleagues?
We're worried. We're anticipating, because of the way the virus works and the incubation period, we think we're going to see more coming into the hospital in the next week, in the week after that. You know, I mean, here we have, you know, a few big holidays close to each other. Everybody's just itching to get together.
Claire, what about PPE? What about staffing? Are you facing shortages? Are you okay right now? What?
We are doing fine with PPE. My biggest concern is staffing, because our staff are human. They too are catching the virus. And at times they are exposed, maybe to a family member, or they've been in the community and they can't come to work if they are positive. I'm also concerned about the fact that even before the pandemic, in terms of nursing, there was a national nursing shortage. So you layer on the pandemic with people having to be off work because of exposure or positivity. And then you layer on the fact that more people are coming into the hospital for care and our beds are filling up. That is a staffing crisis. The nurses are needing the help. And so I have to figure out how to bring in help for them as much as I can. And I am pulling every lever I can pull.
Being a healthcare worker obviously affects not only you, but your loved ones. What's it been like for you, your family? We've heard some nurses have said that they actually live in trailers to isolate from their family to keep the family safe.
What we've done is we've offered people who are concerned about going home and exposing their families, we've offered them hotel rooms close to the hospitals where they work, so that if they feel like they need to isolate from their families, we have offered them that opportunity and helped cover that cost. But I've read many, many stories about nurses who park a camper in their driveway so that they don't come in and expose their family. So we're thinking of things that we normally have not thought of, because this is an infectious disease and we have to think of how to protect our workers.
Finally, Claire, is there anything that gives you hope right now?
You know, the vaccine gives me hope. Because I do believe that a vaccine will help mitigate this virus and reduce the number of people who catch it. The other thing that gives me hope is that we've got people that continue to come to work every single day when they could just give up. They're still coming in to make sure that we're taking care of the communities that we serve.
Claire Zangerle is the chief nurse executive with the Allegheny Health Network. Claire, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, and please stay safe and well.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Delaware-based Buccini Pollen Group, the Pittsburgh Penguins development partner, is setting up shop in Pittsburgh and making several local hires as the first project nears on the former Civic Arena site. Bomani Howes has been named as Vice President of Development for the Buccini Pollen Group. He's also a partner with Intergen Real Estate Group Partners, which is leading the housing development at the arena site. Bomani, welcome to The Confluence.
Thank you.
Bomani, the Penguins have had the development rights for those 28 acres for nearly a decade. A community collaboration and implementation plan was established in 2014. How would you say that the plan, maybe even the goals for this site, evolved over the years?
I would say in a very progressive way. It was very gradual. The community has been at this since 2005. And so this has been a very long process to get to where we are today. There's been stops and starts, ups and downs. And I would say that at this point, we're turning the corner to some very progressive outcomes.
As a resident, as a businessman in the community, did you ever get frustrated with maybe the lack of progress?
Honestly, yes, I do. Because we're talking real bottom lines here. It's not just for myself, but for other business owners who may not be as fortunate to be able to hang around and survive with all of the challenges, even pre-COVID challenges, to in particular Black businesses in the Hill District. We often don't have the luxury of being able to survive all of the back and forth with the negotiations. And so sometimes it is frustrating when we have these stops and these stalls. But we're optimistic and we're hopeful that this double layer of the pandemic does not crush any more businesses.
Shortly before the Urban Redevelopment Authority was to vote in the spring on the plans for the first major project, URA board member Jody Hirsch told The Confluence that she was concerned that Hill District residents would be left in the dust by the Penguins and, quote, "I hope there's a way to come out of this, giving the public the benefit they deserve, but I'm not super hopeful," end quote. So, Bomani, should residents be more hopeful they won't get left in the dust and will get the benefits they deserve? And if so, why?
Absolutely. You know, there are two different types of developments. There are the type of developments that come through neighborhoods that have been on the other end of disinvestment, and there's no community process. There's no engagement to bring in leadership from the community at key positions. And so this is a bit different now. We're now seeing the likes of Kimberly Ellis, who is the niece of the great playwright August Wilson. She's going to be heading up the cultural legacy plank, which is in the CSIP. You have longtime pioneer developers such as Irv Williams. And then you have myself. When you have this integration, a true integration, people in key positions, you have key persons who are stewards of the document and stewards of the development itself.
Do you think that that inclusion of leadership from the community will erase whatever skepticism, maybe even distrust, that has built up over the years?
No, it won't erase it. And it's healthy skepticism. It's deserving. It's deserving because you have to consider the timeline. And so if you run 90 to 100 years into the 1930s and 40s, when these very racist housing policies, redlining, with partnership of federal agencies like the Federal Housing Administration, the Federal Highway Administration, the mortgage industry, banks, all collaborating to make sure that there is not a continuum of the building of ethnic group economies like the one you would see in the heyday of the Hill District. And so while the skepticism is healthy, we believe that we're making the right push towards a very equitable and transformative development.
And ground is to be broken on that first commercial project, the 26-story F&B Financial Center. When?
Well, the second quarter of 2021 is our intended date for groundbreaking. The exciting piece also is that there's going to be first floor retail. And so there is also an opportunity for small businesses to be able to receive some type of assistance and subsidy for first floor retail.
How much pressure is there to get this right, considering the long-term negative impact that the construction of the Civic Arena had on the Hill District community for several decades?
The pressure is intense, and it's appropriately intense. It's moved from pressure to policy, from community collaborative implementation and planning to actual practice. So we have real opportunities on the table, and the pressure is good, healthy pressure. The community residents and business owners are very deserving to have an opportunity to design and create the place that we call home. But I love the process that we've been implementing over the last couple of years to make sure that we invite community residents and business owners, not only from the Hill, but from around the city, to be a part of this process, to hear the concerns and to link them to the small business opportunities that are available.
Bomani Howes is Vice President of Development for the Buccini Paulin Group, the Penguins development partner. Bomani, thanks so much for your time.
And thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. With the holiday season in full swing and COVID cases on the rise, many schools around Pennsylvania have been going entirely online again. But that's not the case everywhere. Keystone Crossroads reporter Avi Wolfman-Arendt takes us to a district outside Philadelphia that's moved the opposite direction, opening up as others shut down.
A week before Thanksgiving break, Superintendent Bill Harner walked the hallways of Quakertown Senior High School in Bucks County looking for trouble. Not typical teenage trouble, more like virus transmission trouble.
Classes don't look too bad, but we're crunched in a couple places. The problem there is the hallways. They just look like a regular class change.
After starting the school year partially online and partially in person, this was the first day of full week in-person classes for middle and high school students. About three quarters of the kids opted in, and staff were nervous.
There is a lot of concern, a lot of fear of what could happen with us going live today.
All year, this district between Philadelphia and Allentown has slalomed through various challenges in its quest to stay open. Why?
The final decision makers, they ultimately is the school board, and the school board overwhelmingly wanted kids back in school.
That includes board members like Chris Spear, a dad of three who ran for the school board a year ago. People told me that traditionally the board in Quakertown was made up of mostly business owners. In the last few years, a wave of parents like Spear, Rand, and Juan.
that's kind of how I explain my role in this. You know, I'm sort of the community's voice. I'm the one that's accountable to the community.
And Spear says most parents in this semi-rural, semi-suburban community want their kids to be back in school. That's partly a reflection of politics. This area leans conservative. But Spear thinks it's also a reflection of the fact that compared to more dense areas, there have been fewer cases here. And the county health commissioner says his office hasn't confirmed any instances of spread within schools.
The amount of cases we're seeing inside of the schools is far less than what we're seeing in the general population of the community.
Health experts have been trying to walk this tightrope between what's best for students and what will keep COVID transmission at bay. Here's Dr. Anthony Fauci talking about it recently with Yahoo News.
We should try to keep as a default position, keeping the kids in school or getting them back to school.
But what's the tipping point? When cases surged in November, the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia recommended that all high schools in the Philly area go virtual until after the new year. And there's a strong minority in the Quakertown community that agree. One of them is Mairead Williams, a mom of two high school students.
And I'm here to tell you, I'm a proud Trump supporter, but I do not believe this should be a political party issue. It should be a safety issue for our children.
Williams is keeping her kids virtual, an option parents still have. But she says the school board is being too cavalier.
I appreciate that they're volunteering. I appreciate that they're giving their time, but they are not qualified to make life and death decisions where our children are concerned.
Quakertown is one of just three districts in its county that's had at least some form of face-to-face instruction since the school year began. But this may be a case where the majority can't rule forever. That's because teachers seem to be growing increasingly restless. Again, Superintendent Harner.
Yesterday, I was going around the middle school saying, hey, guys, please stay with us. Don't stay home, teachers. Don't go sick.
Indeed, less than a week after the high school reopened for full week instruction, it had to close again, temporarily. The official reason was a staffing shortage, people calling out sick. Several community members said that teachers were scared off because online photos surfaced over the weekend, and they showed students gathered indoors at an unofficial homecoming dance.
That's my biggest challenge, is staffing. It's not COVID right now. It's staffing.
The day Quakertown reopened its middle and high schools, Harner got a card from a beloved teacher. She was retiring, on the spot. Her husband died of COVID in the spring, and she couldn't handle being in a building full of students. Harner read me the note.
As I face the final day of my career as a teacher in QCSD, I am flooded with many emotions.
There's not been a strike or a formal walkout, but the rolling teacher shortages prove that it takes more than a majority to keep a school open. It takes a consensus. And these days, that can be hard to keep. Avi Wolfman-Arendt, Keystone Crossroads.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Isabel Schmaler, Lara Satsui, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.